Greetings, all of God's people. This is again Mordecai Joseph. We're today in lesson 411, and we're going to continue with the law, the last law that we were talking about last time in Deuteronomy 24 about marriage and divorce. And verse 1 again, let's just recap here of chapter 24. When a man takes a wife and marries her, he's the one doing it, then it comes to pass, if she find no favor in his sight or in his eyes, God gives the option here what to do in this case. And of course, it should be a man that is obedient to the law of God, not frivolous, you know, not do just whatever he wants, not caring, you see, because otherwise there are going to be a lot of ramifications. His community, his society, his parents, his uncles and cousins and brothers and sisters and all that, they're all going to know about it, you see, if he's not behaving himself. You see, after all, his wife is a relative. That's how people married in those days. And so a lot of those things have to be taken into account. We're not talking about 20th century where everything's totally disjointed and it's a totally different atmosphere in which we function today. So we should not look at this matter from our point of view, you see, because then we're not going to understand a lot of things. But we have to go to that period of time, to the society, to the way things were, and then under the circumstances, understand this law. And so that's what God is saying here. Here it is, a man in accordance with the law of God, the law of Moses, is in total charge of that from beginning until the end. He likes her, he takes her, he marries her, you know, he has sex with her, and then he doesn't like certain things about her. He sends her away. He writes a book with his own hand, and he gives it to her, puts it in her hand, and she has to go. You see? Well, she goes basically to her father, you know, to her family, to her land, to her property. And there, you know, she looks for another man. Obviously, at this point, she's still a young woman. It's not talking about, you know, way down the road. When she has children, you know, well, things are more complicated. And so, you know, think about all the circumstances when you read this law and understand it from this point of view. And oftentimes people don't, you know, just look at it from the point of view of their own church, their own group, their own community, or whatever it may be. A society that is far away removed from the law of Moses, from that way of life, and then under those circumstances which are totally different, they're trying to understand this law and use it in their own circumstances. And obviously, you have a lot of discrepancies there in what they're going to do under the circumstance. And so he says, well, he's the one that should be doing it, you know, write a book of divorce that is cut off. And, you know, what's a document? You know, he writes it in her hand. So, you know, if she goes somewhere else and she's got a document, she's divorced, she can remarry. And so he gives it in her hand. He has to put it in her hand. And he sends her out of his house. And verse 2, and she departs out of his house and goes and becomes another man's wife. Now, he's not talking about, you know, she walked out of his house and she walked into another man's house. Obviously, you know, there's a lot of background there. You know, she goes back to her home, her family, and, you know, period of grieving and whatever it may be. And maybe they say, well, you know, it's not working out or whatever it may be. Regardless of the circumstances, she ends up being liked by another man in the family, generally speaking, you see, who knows her, and he wants to marry her. And so this is what God is talking about here. And so she departs out of his house and goes and becomes another man's wife. She literally marries somebody else. And so he too goes through the same process. And the latter husband hates her, maybe for the same reason, you see, as the first one, and writes her a bill of divorce. So God is just giving them an example of the way things might happen, knowing human nature, knowing what would happen under this circumstance. Because the first one didn't like her for a certain reason. Maybe the second one, you see, may come up with the same conclusion later on. And so that's where hypothesis, you know, you find here, you know, what happens if, you see, it's a circumstance that God has to deal with because those things happen. It's based on reality. And so God is going to govern this. You see, it's not Moses, it's God. It's not the rabbinical courts, it's God. It's not the clergy, it's God. He's calling the shots. And unfortunately, people like to mess around with the law of God. and take it into their own hands, twist it, pervert it, change it, you see, modify it, and, you know, make it based on their understanding of it and the learnings of their own understanding, and in every group it's going to be done differently. That's the confusion we find ourselves in today. The government says, you know, who cares about you? We're going to take over. We're going to tell, you know, how to do things. You see, this is not the law of Moses. We're talking about the law of Moses, the law of God, the law that proceeded out of the mouth of Jesus Christ, or the God of Israel. You see? And we have to study it from that point of view, not any other concept. So we should lay aside, you know, everything that is in our brain that didn't come from God and look at it from His eyes, not our own or that of others. And so that's what God is describing here. The latter husband hates her for whatever reason. It doesn't say here. And writes her a bill of divorce. He cuts her off also, and he gives it in her hand, just like the first one, and he sends her out of his house. Poor lady, you know, coming and going. Or, if the latter husband died, so it's another circumstance, who took her to be his wife, her former husband, even though the second husband is dead, you would think, well, she's free to marry anybody she can. God says, no, you can marry just anybody you can. He's going to set the limit there. And again, it's not men doing it. God did. That's why we're told, men shall live by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God, not men. And when men say something that is contrary to the law of God, God says, in vain do you worship me, teaching for doctrines the commandments of men. That's a vain worship. And a lot of people, all around the earth, throughout the history of men, worship God in vain. God said, return to the law of Moses. That's the only way I'm going to be worshipped, and I would not accept anything else. Or else. And so, that's what God is saying here. If he is dead, and in this case, she's free to marry, but God says, well, there's going to be a limitation here on what you can do. And so he says here, or if the latter husband died, who took care to be his wife, verse 4, her former husband, the first one, who sent her away, may not take her again to be his wife. God says, I don't want that. After that she is defiled. What does it mean defiled? She had sex with another man. And God doesn't want people to go back and forth under this circumstance. For that is an abomination before the Lord. He's the one considering that way. Now you go to the law of man. And they say, I don't see anything wrong with that. Even the clergy would not see anything wrong with that. Now those women that went through several men, or maybe just one man, and came back to the first husband and remarried them. You know, they realized after all, that's really the person they really liked. They just weren't mature enough at the time. Oh, whatever, you know, reasons they have. And that happens too all the time. God says, that's a no-no. You see? He says, the land is going to be defiled if you do that. And there are many reasons for it, spiritual and biological. You see? Well, that's another time to discuss all these matters. But this is the law of God. It's very simple. And God says, this is the law of Moses. That's the law I gave to Moses. That's the law you should abide by. That's the law you should return to. And those who don't, God is going to have to deal with them in accordance with His law. And so you see here, in accordance with the clergy, in accordance with the courts of the land, it's okay for a woman to go back and marry whomsoever she wants, you know, once her husband is dead. As a matter of fact, you know, not even being dead. You see? Well, these are the laws of man. They're not the laws of God. And we have to make a choice by whose laws are going to be governed. And so God makes it very plain. Her former husband who sent her away may not take her again to be his wife after she is defiled, for that is an abomination before the Lord. And you shall not cause the land to sin. Don't allow it, which the Lord your God gives you for an inheritance. You see, because that's going to create a lot of complications, a lot of problems. By this time, you know, children are involved, and they go from this one, they go to that one, and, you know, it creates a lot of confusion in the society. And so God gave this law to prevent this whole mess, this whole confusion, so people stop playing these kind of games and do not act like that. And whatever they promised to each other to begin with, whatever vow they made, they should stick with it. And in this case, you know, he puts the limitations on what you can do and what you cannot. And, you know, the more you study the law of God, the more you begin to understand also the reasons behind it. You know, this is not the time to explain, expound on every tiny little detail here, because obviously it's going to take forever to get anywhere if we do it. Verse 5, you know, that's the reason why we must study the law of God day and night, you see, so that we can know His mind. We're commanded to put on this mind which was in Christ. This is the mind of Christ we're talking about here. That's what Paul was talking about. He's a Pharisee of the Pharisee. That's his background. That's what he's talking about. He's not talking about, you know, about the concept that people came up with later on, you know. Somebody totally different, you know, another person, another God, another theology, another religion. Yeah, that's the way people read it. And the overwhelming majority of the people of God read it that way too. Why? Because they're ignorant of the law, of the nature of God, of the mind of God, you know, in comparison to what they should know, they do not know. And so they too swallowed some of the lies of the great whore and the harlots that came out of it, you see, and God opens their eyes, and they just bring their background with them. And so they go and read, you know, so-called the New Testament, and they understand everything that they read there from the point of view of the former churches, not from the point of view of God, not from the point of view of the writers. And what they meant, being all Jews, well-versed in the law of God, taught the law of God from youth. With that in mind, they wrote what they wrote, magnifying the law of God, magnifying the law of Moses. You see? That's where we are today, unfortunately, much confusion. And we think we know it all. That's what God's saying, you know, to us. You know, you think that you are rich and increased in goods, you know, in goods, and you lack nothing, you got it all, you understand everything, you're smart, you're intelligent, you know, spiritually speaking, and you don't realize that it's just the opposite. That's why he's saying, you know, I counsel you, take some eye salt, put it in your eyes, and begin to look straight. Find out how was it in the beginning. And then, you know, your mind is going to be functioning properly, and I'm going to be formed in you. You see? That's why he told his own people at the time, do not mix the old and the new. You know, I'm not interested in the teachings of the rabbis or things like that which are not of me. That is, when they are contrary to me, my teachings, or the teachings of the Father. He said, don't mix one with the other, and yet we do it to this very day. And so people read that statement and accuse the Pharisees of doing it, and they don't realize that they've been doing it all along. They're guilty of it. And so God says, this is the law. That's the way you behave. Don't do it, because you're going to defile the inheritance that God gives you, and then God is going to have to throw you out of the land. Verse 5, when a man takes a new wife, obviously, man, people do not take an old wife. They take a new wife. And in other words, he had a wife already, now it's another one. Or he didn't have a wife, and now he's taking a new wife. So it could be either way. That means a young woman. When a man takes a new wife, he shall not go out in the house. In other words, he cannot go to the army. Can't go to war. Neither shall he be charged with any business. That is public business that is going to keep him away from his wife that he just married. He shall be free for his house 1 year. So he should be able to stick around his home without having any public responsibility, you see, without going to the arm, that is to the army, or, you know, faraway expedition, or go on a business, you know, they happen to be merchants as time goes by, you know, people of Israel strayed away from the farm and became merchants, some of them anyway. God says, I don't want you to do any of that. You stick around, you're going to have a honeymoon, not for a month, but for a whole year. I mean, you can still do work around the house, your farm and your land, but don't be away from your wife. That's the law of God. How many people keep it? We're so far away from that, you know. You try to do it nowadays. What is it that a lot of people used to do during the war, or even still do today, though not as much? You go get married, and they have sex, and off she goes, and off he goes, you know. He goes to the army, he goes in abroad, he goes to Europe, he goes here and there, never comes back, or maybe he comes back. You see, in the meantime, she's alone, and who knows what happens. That's against the law of Moses, that's against the law of God, and yet people are like that, call themselves Christians. This is the law of Christ. They couldn't care less about it. They think it's weird. You see, that's how far we've departed from Christ, from the God of Israel, from the law of Moses. And so he's telling us, unless you return to this law, you're all dead. Choice is very simple. He that has an ear, let him hear. Because this is going to happen when the time comes. And this is the law. You want to put on the mind of Christ? Here it is. He says, don't do anything else. Just stick around. He shall be free for his own house 1 year. And shall cheer his wife whom he has taken. And he doesn't need to elaborate what it means. You see? So you see the mind of God here. You see the mind of Christ. You see the doctrine of Christ here. How many people study the law of Christ, the mind of Christ, to understand this? And some people say, what would Jesus do? What do you mean, what would Jesus do? You read his words. You know, as this, you know, in today's language, somebody said, read my lips. And you would know what he said. But people refuse to hear it. They say it's done away with. And then they have that silly statement, what would Jesus do? Which is a very silly one when you think about it. You know, you just go to a tiny little portion of his words, of what he said, and you think based on that, and not only based on that, that you're going to live your life, and you totally forget all the rest. That's foolishness. You study the law of God from beginning until the end. You meditate on it. You live by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. That's what Jesus Christ commanded us. This is what would Jesus do. You see? He would live by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. And if you don't, you are a liar. And if you deceive yourself to think that you do. That's where, unfortunately, an awful lot of people are, including their leaders. You know, when the blind leads the blind, they all fall into the same ditch. And so this is what God is saying here. You stick around for a whole year and cheer your wife. Who is teaching this law? What society is teaching this law? None, unfortunately. That's an old stuff, they think. Verse 6, no man shall take the meal or the upper millstone to pledge. For he takes a man's life to pledge. In other words, there are certain items that some people, you know, they need a little loan, whatever it may be, and so they give you a pledge for it. But God said there are certain things you should never take away from a man. You know, the things that are necessary for his livelihood, like, you know, the meal. In other words, in the old days, you know, in order to grind the corn or the wheat or whatever it may be, and some people still use it to this very day. As a matter of fact, I grew up in my home when I was young. We actually had that stuff. Those two pieces of stone, you know, one large, one little one, and you would grind things on it. I did it sometimes, you know, and not only grain, but other things too. That's how people cooked in the old days, you see, and they created, you know, they didn't have blenders and things like that, and that's what they use. So, without doubt, a man cannot prepare his own meal. And God says, don't ever take that. Take something else, but not that. So, you're not going to go hungry. And so, that's the law of God. Don't ever do it. Certain things you should never take away from people. And that's what your degree, you know, the law of the land, you know, they recognize it, even though they're not always as honest about it. Certain things you should not take away from a person. You know, for example, when he declares bankruptcy, you know, he can't take his home, he can't take his car, you know, certain things like that. Because what else is he going to do? You know, live in the streets, and you're going to end up with a bigger problem. And, you know, that was based on that, because the fathers of the Constitution, who were responsible for many of these laws, you know, they were well-versed in the Word of God, even though they did not necessarily follow everything. Otherwise, all this would have been a part of the Constitution. You see, that's where the problem. You see, when people go to church, read the Bible, or they go to the synagogue, and they do not govern their life on a daily basis in their own lands and country and city and business, according to the law of Moses, the law of God, you see, according to the entirety of the Bible, you know, they happen to believe in both of them. In the Jewish community, they believe only in the Hebrew Scriptures. But life is not governed in Israel based on the law of God. You see, people couldn't care less about God, even the religious community. They do their own thing. That's why they have substituted the law of Moses for the halakha. You see? And that's very unfortunate. Not that everything in the halakha is wrong. A lot of it, you know, is based on the law of God. But, you know, people into their own understanding too much. And they create a mixed-up society with a lot of iniquities in it. So this is one of the laws that God says, don't do it. Verse 7, if a man be found stealing any of his brethren, you know, kidnapping, that's basically what it is, thou shalt not steal. It doesn't say thou shalt not kidnap, it says thou shalt not steal. So that falls into that category, and the penalty for that is death. Simple as that. People do not get the death penalty today for kidnapping. They do it all the time, and they get away with it. And if a man be found stealing any of his brethren, all the children of Israel, and he deal with him as a slave, you know, you steal him, and then you enslave him, and then you sell him, then that thief, that's what he is, a thief, shall die. Period. That's the law of Moses. This law is not done away with. Christ said it's not done away. He said it's not done away with. He said heaven and earth shall pass, but not one jot or one tittle from this law shall not pass. How many people believe it? They don't. You see? Obviously, to his own disciples, he didn't give this authority to do it, to put any man to death. Because we're not in charge of the government, but if we were in charge of the government, when the future is coming and the people of God, the sons of God, are going to be in charge of the government, this law is going to be in force. You steal somebody, this is what you do to him, you're going to be put to death. Administration of death was not done away with, ultimately speaking. You know, just temporarily set aside. As Christ said, this is not my kingdom. So he told Pilate, if it was my kingdom, then my servants would have fought you. You see? So he did not do away with war. When he comes, that's the first thing he's going to do. War against humanity. That's not done away with. That's going to be part of the saints. First job is go to war. You know, destroy all the evildoers upon the face of the earth. And then given power to reign, you know, upon the earth with a rod of iron. Against the evildoers, obviously, only. As for the others, you know, who are obedient to the stuff of the shepherd. So God makes it very plain. You steal somebody, you're going to be put to death. That's the law of the land. So shall you put away the evil from the midst of you. And what happens when you don't do it? Well, people keep doing it. And the penalty is much greater on the society. And if you just caught a kidnapper and just put him to death, that's it. That's the end of the story. He's not going to do it again. You know that for sure. And others are going to be afraid. And they wouldn't, you know, they wouldn't think, you know, I can get away with it. And a lot of people do it all the time. You know, this country in the United States has millions of slaves. People are not aware of it. People are being stolen from other countries, brought over here, kidnapped with all kind of promises, enslaved, used, you know, in servitude and all kind of things, sweatshops, nannies, whatever it may be, prostitution. The land of Israel, the land of Judah, is full of it. You know, they import all those wild women from Russia, Yugoslavia, Philippines, Asia, other places, people in poverty who are seeking some place to make a living, you know, send money back home. A lot of them are brought to Israel. They deal with human slavery in Israel to this very day. And so it is in this country, you know, like, that's what the pimps are all about. And everywhere, all around the earth. And God says, put a man like that or a woman like that responsible for it to death. No mercy. And God is going to deal with him, you know, since society is not doing it when the time comes. He says, you've got to put the evil from your midst. And if you don't, you're going to be paying the penalty double. Verse 8, take heed in the plague of leprosy that you observe diligently and do according to all that the priests, the Levites, shall teach you as I commanded them. So when God wants the priest to be involved in anything, they're involved. When he hasn't mentioned the priesthood, they have no business being in it. And that's what Christ warned his disciples. The rulers of the Gentiles, you know, they like to exercise dominion authority over people, but such shall not be the case among you. You're all brethren. Now in areas where he commanded them to intervene, they should. In areas where he did not, he says, stay out of it. Mind your own business. You see? You're not the overlords over my heritage. I'm the boss, not you. That's what he's saying here. And people are not listening to it. And so he says, I commanded them to get involved in that, you know, in the case of leprosy. Because there's going to be a need for healing there and forgiveness and atonement and things like that. So obviously they need to be involved. And they are the physicians also of Israel. They have the knowledge and understanding. So God commanded them to be involved in that. Not somebody else. That's how the medical profession came about. You see? People went into the profession on their own when God says only the priesthood should handle that, and for free, because you're paying them the tithe to take care of that. Well, look where we are because we are disobeying the law of God. And so it says, I commanded them, so shall you observe to do. You know, that's very plain. Plain words of God. And everything that He gives us is very plain. God wants us to obey His commandments about every given law. And all these laws that we've been reading here, like in the beginning of the chapter, speaking about the man, you know, that takes a wife and marries her and so forth. Every single law that God gives us here, He wants us to obey and do, not do our own things. And people obviously did not follow the law of God, and so they ended up in all kind of mischief. And let me just add something about the first law that came to mind. The one in verse 1, when a man takes a wife and marries her, what does he do? You know, if he hates her and takes her away. It's very interesting that later on God Himself used this very statement about His own relationship with His own wife, Israel. You read in Jeremiah chapter 3, where He says to His own people, they say if a man divorces his wife and she goes from him and becomes another man's, may she return to her again. Well, as He said here to Moses to tell Israel, no, she cannot. You see? He says, may she return, may he return to her again. And apparently, maybe the man is the one initiating it in this case. And so he adds, would not that land be greatly polluted? You see? Because that's what he says here. Don't do that. Don't go back and say, well, now she's free and I changed my mind and I realized that she was, after all, a good woman. And God says, no, you don't do that. Because if you do that, God says, it is an abomination before the Lord and you shall cause the land to sin. And that's what He's saying here. Shall not the land be greatly polluted? And yet notice what God says here in contrast to that. He who gave the law, He says, but you have played the harlot with many lovers, yet return to me, says the Lord. Now what's the difference between God doing that and man who cannot do that? Man cannot atone for the sins of his wife. He cannot even atone for his own sins. But God can. And the way He's going to do it, not just only by applying His blood to her and atoning for her, but to begin with by dying first. So he's free from that marriage, and then coming back to life, then he can take her after washing hair and cleansing hair and purging her and all that, and then he can come back to her. But otherwise, you know, for human beings, we obviously cannot do that. And so God gives us laws, and we must obey them, you see. And we're not to begin with in the category of God who can do things which we cannot. And so I thought, you know, that was a very interesting comment there. Just came to mind later on in regard to that one. And for every law of God, we should have this attitude. God said it, we obey it. You see, we do not make our own laws and change whatever and do whatever we want. And sometimes, you know, we're not as zealous as we should be by the law of God because our desires, our own wishes and feelings, you know, get in the way. In essence, that's what happened to even King David, a man according to God's own heart, who obviously was still a human being and had his own mistakes and weaknesses, like any human being, you see. As we are told about Elijah himself, who was a man of like passions, just like us, you see, and yet a man of great faith, a man of great righteousness. And King David, who knew this law very well, and he was married. His first marriage was to Michal, or Michal in Hebrew, the daughter of King Saul. And then when he had to flee from King Saul, well, obviously, he couldn't take his wife with him. You see? And so what happened? Well, King Saul just took her and gave her to somebody else, which was not right on his part, so he already made something that was not right. In other words, he did something contrary, in essence, to the law of God, to take someone's wife and give her to somebody else when that marriage is not dissolved. In other words, there was no divorce there, so really he had no right to do it, but, you know, he couldn't care less about the law of God. He just did what he wanted. He was the king, you see, a very unrighteous act. Well, that was a very wrong thing to do. So what happens later on down the road when David
comes around and becomes now the king, and Saul is gone, and he's in charge. By now he has already wives and children, but he still loves Michal. What does he do? So in making peace with Israel, the northern kingdom, and as they were going to unite together, he tells them basically, well, one condition that I have is I want my wife back. By this time, she already is married for several years. You know, all this time that he was away from her over a 10-year period, because he was fleeing for his life for about 10 years. He was in his 20s when he got married, and then a few years into the kingdom, so probably a period about 15 years. She has already 6 children. She's a mother of 6 children, and she has a loving husband. Well, David doesn't think about that at this point. And obviously, he's not the one that sent her away. You see, she was taken away from him. But the reality is that she was married, and she was defiled by somebody else, you know, from the biblical point of view of defiled. You know, what it means is basically that she had sex with another man. That's what it means. And so she, in essence, could not return to him. But King David, you know, he was very much in love with her, and that's all he could think about. And so what happened after that? Well, he brought her home, and then one day we read the story about him bringing the Ark of the Covenant into the city, and he dances before that, and Michal looks through the window, and she sees him, and she despises him because of the manner in which he dances, and she tells him about it, and he gets very furious and very angry about her. And then he basically, he puts her away, and he never touches her. And she never had children from him. You see? So, it's as if God said, well, that was not a good thing for you to take her back to yourself. And so, things worked out that she was still in the palace, but he had no relationship with her. Anyway, you know, when we do the things that God tells us to do, life becomes simple. We do not complicate matters. And yet, unfortunately, oftentimes we complicate matters, you know, when we inject our own input into it. And, you know, sometimes we do it out of ignorance, because we're not thinking, or whatever it may be. And our job is, you know, when we make mistakes, when the righteous falls, he has to stand up and keep going. You see, repent and keep going in the right way. Anyway, I just thought I'll mention this one. And by the way, I was listening the other day to lesson 404, and I noticed that I made a mistake there. In other words, we were talking about Jesus Christ and the prophecy about him coming from Nazareth and explaining the meaning of the city of Nazareth. And instead of saying that, reading the statement where it was said about him that he shall be of Nazareth, as it, you know, as the law, that is, as the scriptures said about it, and yet nowhere in the scriptures would you see that. And so, by mistake, I said, you know, he out of Nazareth, you know, I shall call my son. Well, that was out of Egypt, not out of Nazareth. Of Nazareth, it says, and he shall be called a Nazarite. You see, according to the prophet. Anyway, well, let's continue from this point here in verse 9. And in verse 9 again, we are going to read something that is linked to verse 8. In verse 8, we're talking about the leprosy. When you have leprosy, you go to the Levite, you go to the priest, because you see, sickness and disease and all that has to do also with a spiritual matter, and therefore, the one who should be dealing with it is obviously the person that was in charge of the spiritual life of Israel, and that's the Levite and the priest. And that's the reason why the medical profession was in the hands of the children of Israel. Because when you get sick, when you get ill, you know, you have obviously we're not behaving yourself, you know, eating the wrong things or, you know, whatever it may be. And you need to be cleansed. You need to be purified. You need to be holy. So you can appear before God, you see. And sacrifices were involved there, and admission of guilt, whatever. So the priesthood is the one that handled all that. And so naturally, the priesthood was in charge of the medical profession in Israel, of healing, of investigating, you know, sicknesses and diseases and determining what it is and making decisions based on that. And if you see what Israel had done, they have taken that, among other things, away from the priesthood, including the educational department, I say the Department of Education, the Department of Correction, Justice Department, all those things were taken away from the Levites and the priesthood, you know, as the society disintegrated in essence and went astray, you know, including the Levites. So now we find ourselves in this so-called separation of church and state. Well, when God returns all of his people back to himself, things are going to be just like they were in the beginning. And again, the Levites will be in charge in the priesthood of the health of Israel, of the education of Israel, of the justice and judgment in Israel, you see, just as God meant for it to be, because all these things have to do with the law of God. You see, they have to do with righteousness and sin, and no man can take it upon himself to appoint himself as a Levite or a priest and be in charge of these matters. Well, anyway, this is what we read here in verse 8. That's a little bit of the background there. And, you know, shows you how far we are from God, how far we have departed from the Torah of Moses, and why God tells us, unless you return to the Torah of Moses, where all things that you do is in accordance with the law of God, with the law of Moses, that God gave him to give Israel, you see, God is going to bring an utter destruction on his own people if they do not repent. And so in verse 9, he continues, linking it with verse 8, but the leprosy, remember what the Lord your God did unto Miriam, by the way, as they came forth out of Egypt. And it's very interesting, since that happened to her, there was absolutely no mention of her. She sort of went into darkness, you see, off the radar, not aware. In other words, nobody was aware of her, at least, you know, the nation as a whole. And the scripture is just silent about it. And it must have been extremely humiliating for her all this time. And that's the only mention that there is of her after her death. Remember what God did to Miriam. And so even though she was brought back to the camp, apparently God never felt comfortable about her, or whatever it may be, we don't know. But that sin that she committed there and incited Aaron to do likewise against Moses did cost her an awful lot. And so she had no honorable mention until this point. And again, it's not in a positive way here, but in a negative way, unfortunately, for her. Well, that's a lesson for us to learn. There are certain things we should never do, because the consequences are for a long, long time. And so he says, you remember that. In other words, don't forget what God did unto Miriam. By the way, as you came forth out of Egypt, when you... And then he switches to another law. In other words, in conjunction with the law about the leprosy, God brings Miriam into the picture. And so it is in a very bad light, negative light, and obviously not a positive one for her. Verse 10, when you do lend, that's another law, when you do lend your neighbor any manner of loan, you see, it's okay to give a loan, but God says it's not okay to take interest. You shall not go into his house to fetch his pledge. You see, you gave it to him, that's true, that's your property, but his home is his castle. That's basically what the fathers of the Constitution, you know, they tried very hard to inject this concept into the Constitution, that a man's home is his castle, and you have to treat it with respect and honor. But obviously, as time goes by, the government takes over more and more and more, and they couldn't care less about this law. You know, the IRS wants to take something from you, they come and take it. You see? They come into your home and they grab everything and take away from you whatever they want. If the police wants to do it, they do it. You see, if you committed a crime, you know, they just come and confiscate everything you have, especially, you know, for those who confiscate the crime of drug addiction or drug smuggling or selling, whatever it may be. You know, they just barge into your home, they break down the door, you see, and they do what they want. Well, God says, you know, when you loan to someone, and likewise, you know, the bank would do the same. You know, if you bought furniture or things like that, and you failed to pay, you know, you couldn't afford it, whatever it may be, well, they send the police after you, power of the state, and they come into your home, whether you like it or not. You see, if you don't open the door, they'll break it and take it away from you. Well, this is the law of God. Don't ever do that. You see? when you do lend to your neighbor, you know, be it in a setting of a personal loan, a person to person, or a group, organization, banking, you know, industry, whatever it may be, it's neither here nor there. The law is the same. When you give a pledge to someone, that is, when you give a loan to someone and he gives you a pledge, you know, in return, in those days that's the only way you could do it. Today you just sign, you know. And but, you know, they always check the collateral, you know, what can you put on the other side to guarantee that you can pay. And, you know, generally they'll check with you and find out your finances, you know. Okay, what do you have? You have a property, a home, a car, this and that. And we'll use that as a collateral. Well, God says, okay, somebody had done that, but don't go to his home. Don't ever go into somebody's home. Don't ever humiliate a person. Don't ever do that in front of his wife and children. Don't ever take somebody's dignity away from him. You see? Okay, you have the right to take it back, but not under these circumstances. He says, you shall stand without. Stand outside. You see, you come to him, you stand outside, and you tell him, look, you know, I gave you the loan, and you haven't paid it, and I came to pick up the pledge because we agreed on that. God says, that's okay, you can do that, but you got to stand outside. So it shows you the law of love, the law of mercy, the law of dignity, the law of compassion. And in contrast, it shows you how the society went far away from it. And that makes God extremely furious. And that's why he said he's going to pour his wrath upon his own people, and he had done it many times. And he's going to do it over, you know, that is, he's going to pour his wrath over the whole world because everybody is guilty of that. And he says, you shall sin without, and the men to whom you do lend shall bring forth the pledge without unto you. Do it in a dignified manner. Maintain his respect. Maintain his honor. And honor is extremely important to God, and it's not to men, unfortunately. And that's why oftentimes, you know, when police arrest somebody or things like that, you know, you see a very degrading scene there, totally humiliating, you know, that sometimes even on the road they stop you, you know, to get you, you know, on the floor and handcuff you or things like that, you know, sometimes they beat up on you. That's despicable in the sight of God. People forget that we are all made in the image and likeness of God. We're his children, and he cares about every single one of us and our respect and dignity. And even the person who deserves to be punished, he said, you know, if you give somebody 40 lashes, he said, you make sure that you don't go beyond 40. As a matter of fact, you know, the Jewish community, the rabbis made it 40 minus 1. You see? Never go beyond that. And he made it very plain. The reason is because there is something fiendish and sicky, you know, very sick in about human nature, which is obviously from the devil, not from God. That when we begin to abuse someone, we get to the point where we demonize the person, then we couldn't care less about the person, and he becomes no longer a human being to us. And then we go on in the punishment. And that's what people do to each other, either in deed or in word. And God forbids us to do that. And that's why, as Jesus Christ said to his people when he was talking to them, you know, if you call a person a reka or something like that, you see, give gradations of punishment. You're going to stand either before the court or judgment, and after that, hellfire. You see? You know, when you call somebody, in other words, reka means, in Hebrew means empty, nobody, nothing. If you degrade a person so much in your own sight and you treat him like that, God says you're in danger of hellfire, utter destruction, because now you have absorbed the mind of the devil and his nature. And that's the reason why people behave in this manner. And so God says, always maintain the dignity of a person. And so when you punish someone, even if he deserves it, you don't go beyond that, because he said, if you go beyond that, your brother is going to be despised in your own sight. And when you get to that point, you see, you have no respect whatsoever, and he's no longer a human being to you. And God says, don't ever get to that state of mind, because then God is going to come after you, and he promises. People like that who are going to end up in this, you know, state of mind, he said the lake of fire is awaiting them. So it's a very serious business when it comes to God, and yet people are breaking it right and left, and they couldn't care less about that. And oftentimes, you know, the government or the agencies of the government are the most guilty in that. And that's why even when you go to war, he says, you cannot behave like the other nations. You cannot go and rape and, you know, do all kinds of things like that and mistreat people. You see, and if you kill them, kill them, but, you know, do it with dignity and respect. Not abuse them, you see, not torment them, not torture them, you know, as the matter of some is, you know, that's what they do in the Middle East, you know, those Arabs. When they go after the Jews and they capture someone, you know, not enough that they, you know, they beat them to death, you know, and they kill them, then they have to torture them after that. And God forbids this kind of behavior, because people ought to remember, yes, a criminal or somebody might deserve the punishment, but never lose the fact that he is made in the image of God. And always maintain a measure of respect and honor and dignity there. And so that's what God is saying here. You stay outside, you wait for the pledge. You know, you go asking for it. You've got the right to do it, fine. But stay outside, maintain his dignity and respect. And then in verse 12 we'll read, and if he be a poor man, see, he's a poor man, just can't afford it, you shall not sleep with his pledge. You know, if you take his pledge, you know, he says, don't keep it all night. You know, the pledge, for example, is his garment or his blanket or, his, you know, whatever, you know, poor people, what do they have to give? He says, you make sure you don't sleep with his pledge. In other words, you don't take it yourself when he has nothing at night. He says, you shall surely restore it to him, restore to him the pledge when the sun goes down, that he may sleep in his garment. So that's the only pledge that he can give, his own garment. And bless you, and it shall be righteousness unto you before the Lord your God. You see? That's how much God is concerned about everyone. And so we shall stop at this point. Again, this is Mordecai Joseph, greetings to all of God's people.